episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org. And with me, I have Steve Montgomery, the author of The Converging Apostasy and A Quick Outline of Hands-on Eschatology, A Matter of Timing and Agency. And together, we're discussing the themes of apostasy in the New Apostolic Reformation and its history. Steve, it's good to be back and continue our discussion on mysticism and Bill Britton, Sam Fife, the NAR. We've gotten, since our last podcast has came out, we've gotten so many good compliments and feedbacks on this information, because if you're in the NAR, this is the stuff they try to keep covered up. They do not want you to know this. So we're giving the sources for many of their quote unquote divine revelations, and you'd think, Steve, they could have picked better sources for those divine revelations.
Absolutely. It's really mind-boggling, but good to be back with you. It's been a while.
Awesome. Well, let's get into it. We got deeply into discussing Bill Britton and Sam Fife in the NAR, and the break you and I had has been a bit good, because I've been diving into some of the more current histories. As you know, for years, my research went up to about approximately 1970, and recently, we're getting an onslaught of people who are escaping the NAR. And
yeah, thank goodness.
Oh, yeah. And especially with the IHOP scandal. You know, I'm not going to talk about what happened there. Everybody knows. But we're getting a flood of people who are just now waking up, and they're like, wait a minute, what was this mess I was in?
That is right. And, you know, that really makes me think about, like what you're saying, more currently, but more, it's like everything old is new again, and everything new is old again. So when you hear the NAR folks say this or that doctrinal kind of escapades they get into, there's always a background. And Bill Britton happens to be one of those background players. I don't even have this in my notes, but something that came to mind right away is a Methodist church that I've attended fairly regularly. I went up to the person who's in charge of all the prayer initiatives at the church. She's fairly new there. I said, oh, well, good to meet you. So where are you from? She says where she was from. And I said, so where did you worship? She says, well, I worshiped in IHOP. And I said, oh, really? And I said, okay, well, this is a non-charismatic Methodist church. So this is kind of an interesting cross current to have somebody from that very NAR perspective. And then, lo and behold, just on a hunch, I may have mentioned this before, but here goes. I thought it was significant. I mentioned, do you happen to know George Warnock and his writings? And the response looked like what? And I said, yeah, you know, the Feast of Tabernacles. She goes, oh, yeah, I know that one. I said, well, what about Bill Britton's The Pattern Son, which was one of his main influential writings? She said, oh, yes, very familiar with that. And so the same church, the pastor has praised IHOP as a place to learn more about spiritual warfare and fervent prayer, etc. So, yeah, the tentacles are reaching out far and wide, and Bill Britton still remains important. So why is he important? Well, one, he was one of the latter rain prophets, and that can bring a big so what? Well, latter rain, 1948, several of the main prophets were influenced by Jane Leet. So who was Jane Leet? As a reminder, she was a mystic, a 17th century mystic, who said something very unchristian, and that goes with her unchristian background into esoteric teachings like alchemy and Kabbalah and all the other things that esoteric folks like to to go for. But she said that her source of all her revelations was the so-called great goddess, spouse of God, named Sophia. Well, in the esoteric world, that's a fairly common thing to say, because it opens up the Trinity of, traditional Christian teachings to this new so-called balancing, more democratic male-female divinity. It also gets morphed into teachings about Mary, the mother of God. Well, now you have this Sophia, and that can be one and the same sometimes in esoteric world. Okay, another thing about Bill Britton was he taught what I've been calling hands-on eschatology. Well, what does that mean? Essentially, it means this. It's a group of teachings. Some people refer to them as the manifest sons of God doctrines. But basically, hands-on eschatology means that everything that is to occur in the end times will be in and through the corporate body of Christ. So other than some of the terminology, this concept is so, so very present in the NAR. And so you get this kind of backward tracking, because I know you're very, very much into the historical tracing of different issues. You go with the NAR, you take a step backwards, you've got these influential prophets of the Latter Rain movement, take that back to Jane Lead in the 17th century, and you essentially get precedents she set for hands-on eschatology, meaning perfection, taking dominion — that should sound very familiar — and literally carrying out a sacred purge when before Jesus is allowed to return. So that's the hands-on part of it, is that we are going to do it. The body of Christ is going to do it. And so often you hear, it's not just your everyday average Christian who's going to do this. No, it's called out elite folks, the chosen. Okay, so I can show how he had an influence very directly through some interviews that I did with people associated with Bill Britton. So this is before the NAR, but the NAR should hear how these three examples, folks that know about the NAR, they'll say, yeah, these are very NAR-ish sorts of thing to say. So here I am. I call this guy named David Tice, who's been influenced by Britton. And he tells me the sons of God, not the church in general, but those who are, quote, overcomers, will administer the wrath of God. That's a big mouthful, but that's the common perspective that they get. Then I asked, do you realize what an awesome thing this is to say? And David Tice says, yes, I do. I said, it's frightening. That's pretty much an understatement when you consider the lone wolves who like to take things into their own hands, and even movements, say like Capitol January 6th kind of attacks, that this kind of perspective is not what you want people to have in their heads, especially when they have a gun in their hands. So David Tice tells me, he wraps up this way, he says, yeah, it was a scary thing when I read it, but the overcomers will be a channel used by God to pour his wrath out. And you're absolutely right. It's a scary thing. Wow. Yeah, it is a scary thing. So yeah, but this thing about the overcomers, I think I hear that phrase, that word less with NAR folks now, because there's kind of terminology that the earlier incarnation of the Sons of God teachers used that a lot. They loved that word, the overcomers. We are the overcomers. But the part about being used as a channel and all things in the end times will be through us, that's very NAR-like. So I said, well, seems like on a path that people should know about. So I had another conversation, this time with an associate of Bill Britton's. His name was Roy Ralph. I guess you could turn that around and say Ralph Roy. But anyway, his name was Roy Ralph. And so he tells me this: I believe that the enemies of God will be destroyed first and foremost through his saints. Translation, blah, 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 through the saints. Okay, wow. So that's an important thing when you say through. And I know you're aware of this, John, that early latter reign folks, definitely William Branham, but then somebody like Franklin Hall, they said very similar things. And so Ralph continued, he says, Jesus Christ is going to come in his saints. He's going to come with the clouds of heaven, in other words, in his people. Translation, blah, 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 in his people. So even that thing, you know, that Jesus lets it be known that every eye will see when he returns, and this will be like in the clouds, with the clouds of heaven, these folks construe that in a way to make it, it's a metaphor that they twist to their own desires. And so the Apostle Peter even said that about the Apostle Paul. He acknowledged, he says, this would be a paraphrase, but he says, yeah, Paul's pretty confusing, isn't he? But people misuse what he says to their own destruction. So you guys that are well-versed in your scriptures could look that up, because that's definitely a statement that Peter had to say about Paul. Okay, and then finally, here's another conversation. I say finally, no, there's many others, but for the sake of time. This is a conversation with another so-called prophet. His name is Henry Stanley. And he's a little bit more backwardsy kind of fellow. I don't know that he was highly educated, not that that matters, but this is the way he expressed things. He said, the Lord is releasing to the sons that authority, see, even to take vengeance on the heathen, so that judgment is definitely, and the government and everything's gonna come under the order and the operation of the sons of God. So again, you get that idea of rulership, you get the idea of a sacred purge, and you get the idea of taking dominion, which should not be in the vernacular of Christians.
You know, it's just fascinating to me, because when you look at what was happening back in the 50s and 60s in the United States, well, actually across the world, it was a very, very different time, and people weren't, they didn't have as much access to information as they do today. So, you know, you can give them a little leeway. They believe some very strange things because they just weren't yet progressed as a people enough to understand, you know, some of this stuff is just pure nonsense. And what happened was they took all of these esoteric ideas and they merged it in with Christianity because it appealed to the itching ears. And like we earlier said, they chose some very bad sources. So, you know, I can still give them some leeway back in the 40s and 50s and 60s, but it fascinates me to no end that this still exists today. You have all of these people who are, because they chose these very weird esoteric sources of mystery, well, they can continue this forever because people are still going to be so confused by it. And one of the things, you don't know this, so this will be a surprise to you, but one of the things I tried to do for this podcast that we're recording today, I reached out to the head of the janelead.org, the website. Actually, she reached out to me, and we started contacting each other and discussing. And, you know, obviously, we disagree on doctrine. You know, I give her that. But yeah. my research, I don't care where the source comes from. If you get good, valid information, I don't care who you are. I'll talk about it. So I invited her on the podcast with us. And when I did, you know, I kind of had a sense that things had progressed in such a way where, you know, rightly dividing truth, find the things that we agree upon, find the things that, well, no, this was a mystic lady from back in decades, centuries ago. And long story short, it didn't work out, because apparently there is still a group of people in the world who are dedicated to the teachings of Jane Lead as though she is some great, you know, goddess of Christianity. I don't know what you call this person. She's a mystic. She's a mystic goddess of Christianity, however you call it. And, you know, if this person is listening, I would be glad to have you on the show to talk through, you know, we can find common ground, but understand why Jane Lead. But I think the common ground that we both discussed via email is still very valid. what she and I discussed, even though she was in favor of Jane Lead, and I definitely am not, where the NAR went with it is so far beyond what Jane Lead even taught. They took her ideas and they laid the foundation with this doctrine from Jane Lead, and then they built towers and towers and towers of theology on top of that, mixed with their own ideas, and they made this mess that really you can't step away from it. If you pull out any piece of this tower of theology that they have, you end up with nothing. The whole tower crumbles. And she, the lady from janelead.org, we were kind of talking about that back and forth via email, and she agreed, man, this has turned into a mess. So even the people who are sympathetic to Jane Lead will agree that the NAR has made a mess of things.
Yeah, this is true. And actually, I can cut to the chase very quickly there and say that if you look at Jane Lead's teachings in totality, the person you're talking to really exemplifies is that through Jane Lead's teachings, you can have your cake and eat it too. So Jane Lead was another one of the folks, like Andrew Jukes, I think his name was, a universalist. So her teachings are that everyone will be saved. But in the midst of those teachings, there's this caveat which says, everybody will be saved. But at the same time, she lays down the doctrinal precedents for, and she clearly states that these things will happen before Christ returns. That's a direct quote from her. And what are those things? Well, taking dominion, the man-child company will take dominion. The Feast of Tabernacles is a type and shadow of the perfection of the elite of the church. And she refers to the sacred purge. She gives several scriptural ideas about that. She calls it, they will smite. Biblically speaking, smite is a very strong word when you talk about destruction of others. And she makes comments about, first, you will have to be cleansed inside so that the works on the outside, what you're giving to the rest of society and the church, can come into fruition. So, yeah, I hear you and I hear her, but I really don't. I don't think that person. It'd be odd to say she hasn't read as much as I have. She probably has much more. But you can clearly see that. And I brought this up, actually, the same comment with a scholar, Dr. Bridget Jacobs, who studied Jane Lead. And I said, well, how is it that you have these things where it's like she's speaking out of both sides of her mouth, like she goes this way and this way, Judgment Day, dominion, one side, the other side is universal salvation, all will be saved. And Dr. Bridget Jacobs said that this was an example of her having so much written down that her teachings kind of progressed towards something which was very, very easy to be interpreted and had the precedent set for the people who plagiarized her works in the latter rain, which leads on up to IHOP and those guys so influenced. So what it comes down to, it really doesn't matter to me if every iota of her teachings is analyzed properly and what she said here and what she said there fits into one big ball of wax. It matters to me if somebody has the precedent set for hands-on eschatology in which dominion, rulership, and purge happen in and through the corporate body of Christ before Jesus is allowed to return. And you can clearly see that in the NAR, and I would posit that you can clearly see that in Jane Lead's teachings if you know where it is and what to look for. So, but yeah, you're saying some things that really made me think of people kind of taking these old teachings and essentially baptizing them and reintroducing them so that they have different versions of the same concepts. So leading to Sam Fife, Sam Fife was a one-time associate with Bill Britton. And I think Bill Britton, in many ways, went beyond Fife because he was so much more influential to the body of Christ at large and to different charismatic churches that received his influence, to folks like Bill Hammond, who sort of trickle-down effect got the same perspective that Bill Britton had on all this stuff. And so we've already said a lot about this, but just to review, Fife's group ended up being called The Move. Initially, I think they referred to themselves as the Body of Christ, straight from the Bible. But they also became recognized as a very destructive cult with thought reform and plenty of allegations of physical and sexual abuse. So Fife refers to Bill Britton positively in numerous of his materials. And just on a personal note, I can say that of the deprogrammings that I was involved in, also called exit counseling, one of the only people that was completely unsuccessful was a follower of Sam Fife, who'd been in the Move for maybe 10, 15 years. And I don't know what it was. It could have been this person's psychological makeup prior to getting into the group. But it appeared to me that she really was just not there. You know, after about 3 or 4 days, we had to determine this is not working. So, unfortunately, some of the sources I use from Sam Fife are in his writings, other ones, but here's some of the main ones. One is the One Corporate Man. That should sound familiar to the old concept that we hear in the NAR. Sons of God teachers would call this the man-child company. The One New Man. This should be very familiar to people who have heard Bob Jones and all these guys, Latter-day roots, but influential on IHOP and others. Then here's another one, The Mystery of a Man and a Maid. This one is another one interesting because it kind of wink, wink, nod, nod, back to the teachings of the second century Gnostic Valentinus. And that's a big can of worms, but just to let you know, it's been around, that kind of idea. And then here's another one, get into the theocratic urge, God's divine school of government. So Fife was teaching on that. And then this one is just pretty much more explicit. He calls this teaching Deeper Teachings, the Meat of the Word, number 34, the Manifestation of the Sons of God.
You know, the man-child come up in a episode. You and I were just discussing it prior to this, actually, the Hobart Freeman episode. We were talking about the manifested sons of God, and Hobart, like William Branham, was a teacher of the man-child theology. And even though Branham used different names, it's the same theology, and it's woven all throughout the Christian identity movement because it was the framework for what they chose to be as the race war. And you can go to William Branham's sermons, and if you search for the super race or you search for the battle that's coming between the African-Americans and whites, he talks about this. That's exactly the framework for Christian identity. And it would be good to pause a moment because in that episode, we really didn't define it. I assumed everybody knew, and you know, I grew up with these weird teachings, so what's in my head is not always in the audience, but there's a chapter in Revelation 12, that it talks about the woman in great travail gives birth to a man-child.
Yep.
And they believe, the people of this weird theology, they believe that this is either their group or their leader. There's different variations of it, but whatever is the implementation of this, this is the thing that rises to make war with the enemy. And in the construct of a destructive cult, sometimes that enemy is the equal to other Christians, because the other Christians who don't join in your sect, they're the bad guys, you're the good guys, you're the elect seed, they call it. So this man-child theology isn't just making war with, you know, in Revelation it's war with the beast, and you know, Christians, when they think of this, they think of this battle between the forces of good and evil in Revelation's eschatology. well, these guys really truly believe that it's human beings. We're fighting other human beings, some of which are Christian.
Yeah, John, I'm glad you brought that up. 2 points. One, as you're talking about race war, isn't that interesting, ironic, that somebody so clearly understood to be an evil person, generally speaking, Charles Manson, also had that idea about race war. So that seems to be a favorite topic of folks that are pretty much in the deep end of the pool. And the other part is the war against other Christians. You can very, very clearly see this in all of the manifest sons of God teachers that were Latter Rain prophets of 1948, who were influenced by Jane Leap. And so what do they say? They say that judgment begins first in the house of God. Well, this is clearly from Scripture. However, when you get the idea that they will carry out this judgment, and it's coupled with things, I could quote many of them, Kelly Varner, Bill Britton, Bill Hammond, George Warnock, when all of those folks are talking about this will happen in and through the church, it's our responsibility. Speaking of Sam Fife, he clearly said this also. Then you have a war yet to be manifested, thank goodness, but you have a war carried out by these elite Christians that will be first aimed at Christians and pastors. Bill Hammond has this famous statement, famous to me, where he says, if God sacrificed his own son to birth the church, what do you think he's going to do to those pastors who aren't getting with it? They're going to be sacrificed too. So, yeah, it's very clear. That's a NAR prophet, you know, saying something like that. Well, that leads me to something here, John, which I know you'll relate to. And that is the idea that there's nothing new under the sun. You know, these guys say, oh, yeah, God told me this, God told me that. Oh, really? It's been around. And it just happens to resurface over and over again, slightly different packaging. So under nothing new under the sun, I have this thing from Sam Fife, and I say, Sam Fife sounds like, well, he sounds like the second century Gnostic Valentinus. For example, Valentinus taught that those who are not made sinless will be destroyed. So he had these three groups, you know, the super saved, the average saved, and the never will be saved. The never will be saved are those who are not perfected. Interesting. It's not just guys who are really, really horrible people doing all sorts of crimes and sins towards other people. No, he's saying that if you're not perfect, you're going to be taken out. Okay, so that's Valentinus. Well, let's compare that to Fife. Fife said, quote, the only people who survive, he's talking about, as you mentioned in the book of Revelations, the only people who survive are those who achieve a state of sinless perfection. Couldn't be more clear. Now then, I know the idea of Kabbalah, or Kabbalah, as I've heard it properly pronounced, that's a bit wacky and weird, and people just say, it's Gnostic, or it's bad, or it's unchristian. Well, true on all counts, but there's some very particular teachings that came out of that. One out of Kabbalah is the so-called one man. Well, you can certainly hear that in the NAR. In Kabbalah, they call that Adam Kadmon, and he's this idea of this one perfect man who all will be absorbed into when things are made perfect, then God is, quote, all in all. So here's what Fife says along those lines. And I'm quite sure it came from Kabbalah because Bill Britton was influenced by Kabbalah. Also, David Ebal, also Roel Cronquist, also Franklin Hall. All of that's clearly documented in the Convergent Apostasy. So Fife says, quote, there is only one man, and that is God. Interesting. Every other man here on this earth is only a type of the one true man. Okay. Then he says, God will make of all the twos one many-membered man. So you're either in or out. And That's coming straight from Kabbalah. Then Fife also sounds like medieval so-called Christian Kabbalists. And if this doesn't sound mystically inclined, then who knows what is. But he said, quote, "The moon is going to be clothed with all the light of the sun and brought into a spiritual union with Jesus, her heavenly husband." Not only Kabbalah, but that's leaning towards, again, towards Valentinus. Fife says, and here goes with Wesley Swift, with all the other guys we've talked about, Fife says this union will change us into incorruptibility. Now, for your folks that are familiar with the Bible, there are references to this corruption being made incorruptible and all of this happening when Jesus returns. But all of these guys are talking about this perfectionism coming before Christ returns.
Absolutely. And I say this every episode that you and I do together. I'll say it again. So many triggers, man, whenever you start mentioning these phrases. The perfectionism, yeah. Be ye therefore perfect. You know, we had so many keywords that came out of Latter Rain, these loaded language phrases that were just totally ripped out of context and they were programmed in your head. And what's really odd is when you take a step back from all of this, ignore Latter Rain, ignore William Branham, and just look at the framework of how a cult is designed. It's always a carrot on a string. You've got some authoritarian figure who says, you can follow me and you can be better than you are now and give you, you know, he'll give them unattainable goals because everybody's human, right? But he'll tell you he has the power to get you there, and it's a carrot on a string. You never actually reach the carrot. Well, the "be ye therefore perfect," it was Matthew 5. And what's interesting about that is that that phrase comes from a passage that is actually talking about love your enemy, love your neighbor, and be good to those that are around you, those that persecute you. Love the ones who are persecuting you. But what they've done is they've taken that, ripped it out of context, and they take it so that it says that be ye therefore perfect so that you can rise above your enemy and totally destroy them along with the others who do not believe our cult theology.
Yeah, and while you're saying that again, something's going through my mind that I don't have my notes here, but Sam Fife's successor was Buddy Cobb. And so I talked to Buddy Cobb and wrote a few letters to him and then read some of his writings. But he says the same thing about those who are not sinless will be put to death. And so if you don't reach that perfection, and the other thing that comes into my mind is people that know the Latter Rain was and the Manifest Sons of God teachers like Del Britton and Sam Fife, those who know how controversial they were, will sort of skip and dance around the word perfect and get to made complete, brought into the fullness of the stature of Christ. You hear that from everyone to Kenneth Copeland, to others who say these things. So, and even avoiding like John and Angeminus, who are so-called kingdom message folks, totally influenced by Bill Britton. Angeminus, after her husband John passed away, she had not too far back, I think it was 2005 or six, maybe a little bit later, she had a teaching called The Manifestation of the Children of God. And she says, well, you know, the devil takes some of the phrases that we have and we know the deeper meanings. He takes those ideas and he distorts them. And some people go a little bit overboard with it. Well, they just, what that means is let's regroup, let's repackage, let's rephrase, but let's maintain the same ideas. So Fife sounds like others. You bet. He's not original. He sounds like Bill Britton. Fife quotes Bill Britton directly and says, Jesus is the pattern son, meaning you follow this divine pattern and you too will be an elite, chosen, called out son of God who can carry out the judgment, rule and reign, etc. before Christ returns. Fife also sounds like Jane Lead, no mistake, no surprise. He said that the elite will become, quote, one many-membered man-child, there you go, who has become, as it were, the company of two armies. Well, there's a lot to be unpacked there, but two armies, meaning one up in the heavenlies and one down here on earth, they will become one. Interesting. And the idea of the man-child company, yeah, we've heard that. But what I thought was funny is, you know, a lot of these guys who steal their doctrines from others, they carry with it grammar and turns of phrase. They're not, you don't really figure they're their own. This probably happened numerous times with William Branham being somewhat uneducated himself. But when Feist says they will become the man-child, one who has become, as it were, it sounds like he's, what is he doing? He's quoting Shakespeare. He's using a grammatical turn of phrase that doesn't really sound in keeping with him. So I haven't traced that one down where he got that from. But what about these two armies? Well, Fife says, this will go straight back to Valentinus and Jane Lead. He says, quote, in the marriage chamber, the twain will become one flesh. No, he is not talking about a man and a woman will leave their parents and the two will become flesh when they're married. He's just using that as a metaphor for, again, what Valentinus and those who came after him, who were influenced by that kind of thinking, of the merger of that which is above, that which is below. In the occult world, as above, also below. And there you have it. No surprise on that one, too, because the occult world, so much influenced by Valentinus, and it goes through Blavatsky, Alice Bailey, Ruth Montgomery, thank goodness, no relation, but anyway. So what is the source for these teachings? Well, let's try Jane Lead. She said this in the 17th century, quote, Christ above and Christ beneath may join together in those who shall personate him upon the earth. Personate him. Follow him? No. Because she clearly says in her other statements, they will be all godified as Christs. And this idea, really, the Christ above and the Christ beneath, sounds like she's getting a little bit off on that. Here's another one. Fife sounds like Jane Lead and Bill Hammond. So Fife said, all throughout time, there have been two great armies, one on the other side of the veil, sounds kind of mystical, and one on this side here on earth. He says, the army on the other side of the veil shall be incorporated with those alive on earth. Funny choice of word there, incorporated, because it's not really correct grammatically, I don't believe. But Jane Lead said similar things. So what Fife and Jane Lead are getting at there is perfection through theurgical means. So what does that mean? That literally means what in the esoteric world they would say, invoking spirits to do your bidding, to give you divine revelations, or to literally come into union with, to become a, quote, channel, would be a new age way to put it. And so where did that come from? Well, the wording of those on the other side shall be incorporated, Lead says, through a transforming correspondency, the saints on earth will become companions to those of high degree in heaven. Really? I don't see the Bible talking about that too much. Well, where did this go? I mean, we're talking about stuff in the 17th century. Bill Hammond, the current day NAR prophet, says this, the elite must join angelic hosts. The angels will come and appoint themselves companions. Well, that's what Lead said. So, Hammond says this probably three times. I'll just quote it once. He goes, accept them. So he's very excited about that concept.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the latter rain, charismatic, and other fringe movements into the new apostolic reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. We're talking about the two great armies, and though they repackage it, they rebrand it, they give it, in some cases, they just shroud it in secrecy, because whenever this gets out to the public, it turns into a mess, such as what happened with the Joel's army. So when they're talking about the two great armies, one of the reasons why they always go back and focus on these Latter Rain guys is because the birth of the Latter Rain focused intently upon the Joel's prophecy, and it was talking about the great army of locusts, etc., that was rising up. Well, back in Latter Rain, they said, this is us, let's prepare for it. We're about to do exactly what these NAR guys are predicting. It didn't happen, and, you know, Latter Rain died out. NAR is rebranding this again, and some years ago, I can't remember the exact date, this made news, right? You had, who was it? I think it was Mike Bickle influencing Todd Bentley about the Joel's army. And suddenly this gets blasted all over the internet and the, the newspapers from Southern Poverty Law Center that these guys are teaching this militant version of Christianity right here in the United States. And it turns into this fine line between Christianity and domestic terrorism in the way that they present it. They hadn't armed themselves, but what's interesting is Southern Poverty Law picked it up, because if you trace its roots back, it's not just Latter Rain that shares that root, it's also Christian Identity. You had Wesley Swift, and you had all of these guys that were using the same exact thing, same exact theology from Jane Lead and others. And what did they have? They had the celestial bodies teachings. So when they're talking about Christ above, Christ below, they're talking about the bodies incorporated. That was directly from Latter Rain and Christian Identity. They were both teaching that you would come in this, you know, these two dimensions, sometimes they would say, would come together and you would be one with your celestial body. I grew up with this nonsense, right? And now I take a step back from it, and it makes great sci-fi movies, but this isn't Christianity, man.
No, it is not. And numerous comments come to my mind, but one in response to what you just said is, because of the controversial nature of the Latter Rain and how they're coming into, a lot of people are criticizing it. Well, because of that, the NAR is aware of that, and they use the Latter Rain folks and their terminology and their teachings kind of like a straw man. And so they say, oh, look what those guys did back then. And they slice up the straw man, and then they come around the back door and teach the same old stuff. And the idea of, you know, just if your listeners and our listeners have not heard this enough, it can't be repeated enough, is the idea that you have the fivefold ministry primarily nowadays with the idea of current day apostles and prophets. Well, the stepping stone from Latter Rain to manifest sons of God, and then bring it on down to the kingdom message in the 1980s, and then the current day NAR, all of those guys had this idea of ongoing revelation. So, yes, there's a bridge that goes from the deeper teachings and manifest sons of God on into Christian Identity, and it just gets darker and darker as you go. People who have taken that step, I can easily tell you that Bill Britton happens to be one of the more slippery ones, because he was accused of saying things like that, never really pinned down thoroughly, in my opinion. But some of the other great prophets of the Land of Rain that were influenced by Jane Lead did. That would be Roel Cronquist, J. Preston Eby, George Houghton, the father of the latter rain, and then also like next generation folks like David Ebaugh, who you and I have talked about as being, you know, directly in identity teachings. And also another one, another slippery one, was a close associate of Bill Britton's. His name was Kelly Varner. So he taught all the typical Manifest Sons of God stuff, but he also is playing footsie with the identity stuff, apparently. I still have more to do on that. Well, so here we go, Fife and the idea of perfection. And this should sound fairly familiar to folks that are aware of what the NAR is up to. Fife said, quote, "The second coming is in and through the select, the Manifest Sons of God." So you could take out Manifest Sons of God if you think that's too controversial. And you could take out the whole second coming is in and through his elect. And just use those words, in and through. And I've heard that from everyone from Sam Fife up on through, again, the Kingdom Message folks and on to Bill Hammond. In and through. Look out for that phrase, because there's a world of hurt coming through that little phrase right there. Fife also said this, quote, "Our responsibility is to recognize the plurality of Christ." Okay, this is talking about perfection, because if you accept what I just said, then you're thinking, oh, well, like Jane Lead, we can become Christ, we can become all godified, and so on. Here's another one. Fife says, quote, "His bride has been called to be the channel through which Christ is manifested." Slightly different from the NAR as far as the wording, but not really. It's pretty close. And this was written in the 50s and 60s. So, hey, it's stayed around, it's lingered, and still influencing folks. So this channel that's going to be manifested, Fife says, this will be, quote, "the manifestation of the sons of God."
And remember, they took this manifested Sons of God theology, it took many different variations and forms. And I think in its earliest phase, it was more intended to be the Joel's Army type of manifestation. The church will be the manifestation of God. And then what happens is when fivefold ministry took off, you had elite manifestations of God who were superior to your manifestation of God, all the way up to, in the end, you know, William Branham said that Jesus Christ would be manifested in a prophet, not a man, but God. So the prophet becomes like the king manifestation in that framework. And then after he died and Latter-day split up, you find all these different variations. It's all the same thing, but it's so difficult to trace down because it wasn't one single theology. It morphed and it changed, and sometimes it went back to its original and morphed and changed again as they're trying to produce this thing that, honestly, you know, they'll never produce it because it's not even biblical, but they try to make it sound appealing enough to attract people to think that they can reproduce this.
Yeah, and what I'm thinking there is something I heard from, Dr. Robert J. Lifton, who is one of the big sources if you're trying to study thought reform and how that works in religious cults. But he stated that prophets, and he's not referring to just Latter Rain or whatever like that, but he's saying these folks that are prophets who have these proclamations can become impatient. And so they're saying, okay, we're going to be the manifest sons of God. This would actually be a case in point with Sam Fife's group. Never happened. He dies in a plane crash. And so they regroup and have to say something to explain what happened. Excuse me. Same thing happened with John Robert Stevens, another Latter-day prophet who pulled off and made his little cult, the Church of the Living Word, also known as The Walk. He claimed to be the spearhead that was going to be manifested first and then draw everybody into it. So the idea of waiting, tearing, praying hard, pulling yourself aside from society, becoming pure so that you can be the elite. That part, I really think there's a dividing line where all this stuff is off to the side and dangerous and destructive as it is. But the more generalized idea of excuse me, which you probably hear more in the NAR, more generalized idea of becoming complete, being Christ's representatives here on earth. But if you really look the way they're saying that, it's just another repackaging of what we've already seen in the earlier days. And you're right. I would say, like you did, that's morphed. It's morphed into numerous different variations. But if you pull it down to that in and through before Christ, you automatically get perfection. If you look at scriptures about that, you get dominion. If you talk about man-child and other scriptures, and you also get the purge part of it, because that's got to be done before Christ can return to a glorious kingdom, which he will receive. Following up on that, the notes I have here about Fife and the sacred purge. So here's what he says. He says, quote, the power to carry out this judgment day, quote, will not be given to the sons after Jesus returns. It will be given to the sons of God before he returns. So change that around, say whatever. It really doesn't matter. If you had that as your basis, and then you can generalize there and morph it into other ideas, that's pretty much a ball of wax what it is right there. He also says this, quote, during the ministry of the sons of God, the, quote, wicked will be cast into the wine press of God's judgment. Again, it's not God, angels. Actually, he's referring to Revelation 14, I believe, right there, where it talks about, and here he does quote him, he says, the angel with the sickle in his hand will thrust in his sickle and reap. Okay, well, that's, it's in the Bible, it's kind of a hard saying. It's the Jesus' disciples said to him once when he talked about, you must drink his blood and eat the bread of life, which he has, eat his flesh. Excuse me, Texas allergies. So he's quoting the Bible, but then look what he says next. Fife says, quote, this represents the angel of the sons of God. Okay, so angel has been turned into a metaphor and then equated with the sons of God who come into perfect union with Christ.
I think this, for me, is the scariest part, because history repeats itself. If you look what happened with Christian Identity and then get up into about the late 50s, early 60s, you see people enacting these things because they've been manipulated to believe they're the ones who are to do this sort of thing. And it was a religious purge that they were doing. It wasn't simply just whites and blacks rising up and having a race war. It was men pretending to be Christian, telling these people that this is the Christian thing to do and we need to take charge. We need to be the ones to execute this. And now, I mean, it just blows my mind. We're in 2024 and we see the same exact things being said. Now, you don't see them acting out on it yet, but there was a time before they actually did in the 60s where these men were saying exactly what they're saying now, and then they acted out upon it. So for me, this is very, very problematic.
Yeah, John, problematic is the right word. Excuse me. And so Robert J. Lifton has written about this and possibilities of people getting impatient. There's a fellow that I haven't really done a lot of research with him, but Travis Law, I believe is his name. He was writing about QAnon, and he said this was before January 6th, the insurrection. Travis said that people in QAnon could become impatient and attempt to make it happen. And Robert J. Lifton, Dr. Robert J. Lifton, calls this action prophecy. So there's the prophecy, but then, okay, what's happening? Nothing's happening. One of your prophets says, okay, today is the day. We've got to make it happen for God. And I think you'd probably be aware of this, but there's a quote from Wesley Swift, and he clearly says, you know, he's talking about the judgment day. He says, you know, we don't have to wait for the angels to do all this. So again, he's talking about the same kind of garbage. And so that leads me to just kind of a review of who's being influenced and who's saying these kind of things. So I just was calling it the three-in-one kingdom principle of perfection, rule, and purge before Christ is allowed to return. Okay, so like the NAR prophet Bill Hammond, Fife said, quote, Jesus is never going to do anything that he does not do through the rest of his body. Okay, somebody not aware of scriptures or not aware of the movements and the people we're talking about would say, okay, that's the kind of idea you hear people say, we will be the, or we are the feet and hands of Jesus to do his work here on earth. That's all good and fine. But when you have this hands-on eschatology and you think that we're going to become perfected in some sense of the word, they will rearrange that to other ideas or other ways of expressing that. We will rule, and that gets into the taking dominion. And see, Peter Wagner's calling it the seven mountains. And it also means this sacred purge that Fife and these others are saying will happen. Yeah, not necessarily amassing guns yet, but the idea is present. And there's a scholar, I'm trying to remember his name. But anyway, he said the same thing, that given the opportune moment in history, like you were saying, we need to learn from history, like George Santayana said, or else we're going to be doomed to repeat it. This scholar also says that he lists all these folks like Christian Identity and Nordic paganist groups and groups like the Manifest Sons of God teachers. He says that all of these, given the right circumstances, like the perfect storm that happened in Nazi Germany in the 30s, he's saying that those things can be reenacted if they have all the right things in place. So we can figure out that's economic problems, threats of war, leaning way, way to the right, becoming more fascist oriented in certain ways of carrying out things. So anyway, this kingdom principle, I heard this numerous places. And from some people who weren't quite as extreme as the Lateran guys. So Fife said it, just like Bill Hammond told me this. And here's another quote from Fife. He says, quote, God is bringing forth a many-membered man-child to govern the world. They will be a, quote, theocratic spirit government order. So when you hear people get on, like, secular news outlets, and they say, oh, you know, it's ridiculous. These guys don't really want to have a theocracy. They're just trying to influence society. Well, if you look more closely at C. Peter Wagner, he took some of these kind of ideas and cleaned them up, baptized them, reintroduced them. And there's quite a few folks in the church at large today who believe this sort of stuff. Does this relate to the New Age? I know a lot of your listeners might be pretty well versed in some of those concepts. Just listen to this from Sam Fife, and I think New Age teachers couldn't have said it any better. So here's what he says. Quote, when he has finished preparing this many-membered man, he's going to purge the earth of every other man by his judgment day. And there will come in a new age and a new earth and a new man living in a new order. Interesting phrasing, terminology, and this preparing of the many-membered man, you know, there's sort of a tip of a hat to Jesus, but it's all coming in and through the many-membered man-child company.
You know, when you take all of the background of why this man-child theology exists, and then take all the leaders in the NAR today who are still teaching this theology, albeit some of them through different names, it's the same theology. It really just, it sends chills up my spine, because this is what we saw leading up to the problems that that happened in the 60s and look at the way politics is being played out today. I avoid discussing politics on this show, but it doesn't take a bright man to see what's happening here, especially whenever you see such a evangelical presence in politics. Not that I'm against evangelicals, but what they're doing, mixing their theology with politics, maybe it's not that bad. But now enter in this man-child. Some of those people who are influencing political leaders also have this man-child theology. And that is the recipe that it scares me. It creates problems for me to sleep at night thinking about how these people can influence things in this way. But, well, Steve, we could go on forever talking about this, and this ties into the Christian identity theme that I'm diving deeply into this year. So I'm very glad we did this one, and I'm very excited for the next one to come out too. So if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more information about the dark side of Latter Rain, read Weaponized Religion, From Latter Rain to Colonia Dignidad, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible. For more about the Converging Apostasy, read The Converging Apostasy, and you can also read the book A Quick Outline on Hands-On Eschatology, A Matter of Timing and Agency.